Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. While the American Civil War was a major defining moment in the U.S. history, those of the Jewish faith living in the South were confronted with the two-headed conundrum, anti-Semitism and the issue of slavery. Having immigrated to the U.S. in order to escape religious persecution, some found it easy to assimilate and adopt slavery, while at the same time maintaining their Jewish beliefs. They fought for the Confederacy, donated monetary resources to the Confederacy, and in some cases engaged in the South's peculiar institution, much as their Christian neighbors were doing. The Jewish Confederate Story, Experiences and Motivations by Samuel J. Corson, describes many of these patriotic Confederate Jews, their positions in Southern society, their likes and dislikes, and how they managed to maintain a Jewish way of life, never shirking their duty and responsibility as members of Southern society, as 4 years of civil strife tore at the nation's soul. Samuel was born in Philadelphia, lived in that area until adulthood, graduated from Penn State University, the U.S. Naval War College, and Mary Washington College. Samuel J. Corson, author of The Jewish Confederate Story, Experiences and Motivation, is our guest on This Week in America. Samuel, welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is such an important story that you're telling. I'm fascinated by this story. What was the inspiration for this? What made you decide this really is a story that's not been told and I need to tell it?
Well, there's a bunch of reasons, but the primary reasons for this particular story was that about 21, 22 years ago, while I was in the midst of getting my master's degree from Mary Washington College, I had to make a decision as to what kind of project I wanted to do for the master's. I chose the traditional paper, and I am a big Civil War buff, and of course, being Jewish, I kind of have a liking for that too. So the Mary Washington allowed me to put the two of them together. And originally I was going to just do Jews in the Civil War, but I was told that that's a little bit too broad and there's a lot of other stuff out there written. And I said, well, how about just Confederate Jews, Jews who lived in the Confederacy during the 4 years. And that was the genesis of how the book came to be. It started out as a paper, wound up as a book.
Did you have any idea once you started this that, hey, there's enough here for a book for the general population and I need to write and publish this?
Actually, no, I didn't. Until I started doing my research, I found that there was a lot of information out there. Some of it very encouraging, some of it not so encouraging, but yeah, I found that there was a lot out there, and some of the archives were just amazing with what I was able to hang on to or get a hold of.
The book is available wherever books are sold. I'll direct you to Samuel's website, which is Samuel J, J-A-Y, Corson, K-O-R-S-O-N.com. The book, The Jewish Confederate Story, Experiences and Motivations by Samuel J. Corson. You touched on this. I want to go back for a second. Why focusing on just Confederate Jews and not the Northern Jews? And you touched on that briefly, but your original scope was both. How difficult was it to pick one or the other, and why did you decide on Confederate Jews?
You know, Rick, I don't remember 100% why I went that route. I think it was a question that my advisor said, we've got to narrow this down a little bit. There are some really great books out there. One by Rabbi Bertram Korn was written back in 1950, and he covers Jews on both the North and the South. I just tried to narrow this down to just the Confederacy, and it just seemed like a really good starting point. And I was a little bit concerned at first there would not be a lot of material, but I found plenty of material.
Well, you did, and I was going to ask you if you had any idea once you started this journey what all you were going to find. And it's such a well-written and researched book, The Jewish Confederate Story, Experiences and Motivations by Samuel J. Corson. Since the Jews, Israelites were slaves in Egypt 3,000 years ago, why engage in slavery in America? What was the reason for that?
Well, that's probably the biggest thing that really upset me. And in fact, talking to one of my co-religionists, a fellow Jew in a temple that we belong to, it is still an upsetting thing, even 150-some years later, 160 years later. Basically, you got to understand that these were Jews who immigrated from Poland, from Germany, Romania, France. And while they were over there, life was just a living, if I can say it, a living hell. Yes. In some cases. So they came here hoping to become Americans, live in a country where there was plenty of opportunity. And those that settled in the South pretty well quickly realized that if they were going to assimilate, which many of them did, they were going to have to fit in like their Christian neighbors. So not all of them fell into the slavery, because not all of them could afford it. But there were some that went that route. And it's still a little bit alarming to this day to think about it. But basically, it was just a question of just assimilating with everybody else.
With us on the program, Samuel J. Corson. The book is The Jewish Confederate Story, Experiences and Motivations. Book available wherever books are sold. And again, the website, samueljcorson.com. I'll give you that through the conversation. So you can get information there and order the book there as well. What about the Northern Jews? Did they have enslaved persons?
Slavery was not near as prevalent up in the North. So some of them had like what we would today call house servants. I'm not quite sure whether you could have called them slaves, but I guess, you know, it's like the old saying, a rose by any other name is still a rose. So yes, there were some that did have slaves up North, but nowhere near as prevalent as what they had in the South. Because remember, a lot of the slaves were used for plantations and household chores. And not too many plantations once you get north of the Mason-Dixon line.
What role, if any, did Jewish law play in the Southern Jews owning enslaved persons?
Well, Jewish law, otherwise known as halacha, H-A-L-A-C-H-A, it's a tongue twister, I know. If you go back and you read the Jewish Bible, especially the books of Exodus and Leviticus, you will find that God ordained slavery. Slavery, of course, was very prevalent in ancient times. Everybody had slaves. You went out and you conquered a country, you made those residents slaves. The big difference, though, with the Jews in the South was, and this pretty well applied to any who owned slaves up North, was that they were all Orthodox Jews. They were all very observing Jews. And in the books of Exodus and Leviticus, there are very specific rules on how you deal with slaves. If you go out and you kill a slave, you can be punished for that. If you hurt a slave, you have to give the slave compensation. It just goes on and on. So basically, if you were a slave in a Jewish household, you were pretty well treated a little bit better than maybe somewhere else. And on the Sabbath, which for Jews is Saturday, the slaves, like the animals and the people, all rested. So there was probably the biggest difference. Very observing Jews, and they treated their slaves very humanely. Although slavery is slavery, no matter how you cut it.
Yes. Did Confederate Jewish soldiers, sailors, continue to practice Judaism during the combat situation? Did that change, or were they able to practice their religion?
So there was the good and the bad with that. Let me talk about the bad first. Down in Texas, there was a Confederate colonel who was literally driven out of his unit because of anti-Semitism from his soldiers. The guy was like, I guess, an 05 lieutenant colonel, and he was driven out, was not able to do anything. Now, the flip side of that was that we had Jewish or Confederate Jewish soldiers who bent over backwards to maintain the holidays. We had soldiers who would go to different towns. If they were camped outside towns, they'd go in there and they would see if they could find matzah for Passover. During Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is where an observing Jew will fast for 24 hours to atone for sins. So we had soldiers who would actually atone for, or they would actually fast for 24 hours. In fact, if I can put a little side note in here, one of my favorite stories is that there was a northern Jew whose Union Army, his outfit was stationed right outside Harper's Ferry, and it was Yom Kippur. He asked his commanding officer if he could go into the woods to pray. Now, normally, Jews need 10 people to have a formal service or to pray. And basically, that's because Jews, we stress praying in a community. Anyway, he was given permission to go out there. He went out there. He was fasting, no food, no water. Came back, asked to go out the next morning. Same thing. He was told, yeah, go on out there, but if we need you, no problem. So again, he didn't have any water, no food, went out there. And Confederate group came up. They started a fight with the Union guys there. Union guys drove them off. And the guy said, can I go back out there again? And the commanding officer said, yep, go ahead. So the man never broke the fast, which is just totally amazing today
Yes.
because there's a lot of Jews today who don't even think twice about breaking a fast on a Yom Kippur. So there was a lot of them. There was two brothers, Jewish brothers from Virginia who were stationed outside Charleston, South Carolina. The brother went into Charleston, got all the requirements for a Passover Seder, and they held a Seder. And in these cases, their fellow soldiers appreciated and commended them because they were keeping their faith, even in the most trying of conditions. So yes, they did a better job than a lot of 22nd century Jews did.
With us on the program is Samuel J. Korson, Korson. His book is The Jewish Confederate Story, Experiences and Motivations, book available wherever books are sold. Samuel's website is samueljay.com, Korson with a K. We'll give you all this as we go through, and we've got all this information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Samuel, did any Southern Jews leave the Confederacy because of the slavery issue?
You know, Rick, that's a question that I just can't answer. Be very difficult. I didn't find any information to that effect. I think most of them, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that most of them stayed in the Confederacy because that was their home. They sent off their sons and husbands, brothers to fight, or in some cases, they got some kind of they just didn't have to go.
Yes.
But I'm not sure how many really left the Confederacy. I just didn't find any information on that.
What about the senior Jewish politicos in the Confederacy? Were there many of those?
Well, there were some. Judah P. Benjamin was probably the biggest. He was originally from Louisiana, and the man had an interesting political career. During the 4 years of the Confederacy, he was the Secretary of War, Secretary of Treasury, and Secretary of State.
Wow.
So he did it all. Ultimately, when the war was coming to an end, he left the country completely, never returned to the States, and was buried in England. There was another gentleman, David Yulee, Yulee. He is also known as the father of Florida statehood, and I believe he became a U.S. senator. So, yeah, Jews were scattered throughout the political spectrum also.
What happened to the enslaved persons of Jews after the war ended? What happened to them?
They were free. I think some of them stayed with their former, I hate to use this, I'm going to say families,
Yes.
and some of them just went elsewhere. But I don't believe that I came across any situation where former enslaved people left their families. There were some Jewish families that were, especially teenage girls, don't mean to pick on females, believe me, but there was one who was very upset when the 13th Amendment came out because that meant that she was losing her slave.
Yes.
But otherwise, I don't think many of them, went north or elsewhere.
Talk about the role that the rabbis played in the intra-religious battles over slavery, the North versus the South. Were those tense battles?
Well, that's an interesting question. That was one that I probably could have written another book on by itself. So, depending on which side of the Mason-Dixon line you were on, you were either for slavery or against slavery, with very few exceptions. So, let me start with Rabbi Michelbacher, right down here in Richmond, Virginia. Very, 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 very pro-slave. He wrote some interesting sermons, fire brimstone, that the Torah, first five books of the Bible, said that slavery is allowed. Deuteronomy has a section that says you're not supposed to change any of the Torah, but yet he saw the 13th Amendment as doing that. So he was very, very pro-slavery. There was another rabbi up in Baltimore, if I recall right, I believe his last name was Einhorn. He gave a anti-slave sermon one evening, and after the services were over, several of his, I guess his board of directors came up to him and said, "It's been nice, but we think it may be better for you and your family to leave town." So he wound up getting another pulpit up in Philadelphia. And there was another rabbi up in New York that was giving sermons for slavery. So it really varied. I mean, to this day, I think depending on who you talk to, you're going to find, I'm not sure if the rabbis are still involved, but you will still find some that say that it's in the Torah, so therefore it's in the Torah. But the rabbis, sometime after the destruction of the temple by the Romans in the year 70 CE, Common Era, the rabbis took a look and said, if we're going to survive as a religion, we have to make some changes, regardless of what's in Deuteronomy. And one of the changes was no more slavery. So Southern rabbis were for it. Most Northern rabbis were not. And that's pretty much the bottom line.
Samuel J. Corson, our guest on the program. The book is The Jewish Confederate Story, Experiences and Motivations. Book available wherever books are sold. It's been described as an insightful historical investigation. We've got a couple minutes left. Investigation, and as I'm reading this, it's well researched. It was an investigation, wasn't it? What was it like finding this information and then putting it in book form for this book?
Well, remember what I said in the beginning, I was doing this for a grade.
Yes.
So, but in all sincerity, when I first started doing the research for the paper, which I did, I think I had to do my thesis paper a year before and present that, I was totally blown out that Jews would have been involved in slavery at all. I mean, we're the religion that celebrates Passover, the festival of freedom, every spring. And yet, here I'm reading about Southern families who not only owned slaves, but were auctioneers of human beings. It was, to use the word disgusting is pretty strong, but it was just very dismaying. But it was a paper that I needed to do. But I will also say that the negativity of reading about the fact that Southern Jews owned slaves was at least overcome by the fact that these people actually maintained their religion in the most trying of conditions. I mean, anti-Semitism, maybe not as bad as today, but it was there. When things started going south for the, poor choice of word, when things started going bad for the Confederacy, who got blamed? The Jews. But yeah, to get back to the original point, I'm not going to say I was upset, but I was, I guess, disappointed, because I never would have imagined that Jews would have been involved in slavery.
What did this do for you and your beliefs from the perspective of your own Jewish faith, and in doing the research and in writing the book, and finding things that were painful from time to time? What's this been like for this journey been like for you?
Well, I am still a firm believer in my religion. I don't believe in some of what's there 100%. I got a problem with Noah and the flood, but that's another story. But it didn't shake my belief in the religion, because when I really sat down and when I was finished with the paper, and even while I was getting towards the end of finishing it, I realized that this was the society that these people lived in. This was a society that not only encouraged slavery, slavery was part of the U.S. Constitution. They did it to assimilate. You know, when you belong to a people, whether it's a religion or whatever, that's been driven out of practically every country in Europe over the past two millennia, and you finally find some place where you can actually settle down and make a life for yourself, you will do just about whatever you need to do to fit in. So that gave me little comfort. But if I could go back in time and talk to some of these people, I think that's pretty much what they would say to me.
You bring these people to life too, as you're talking about that them in the book. It's so well written. This was a major work. It started, as you say, in a classroom. Now it's turned into a book that's has broad popular appeal, receiving excellent reviews. What are you working on now? Are you taking on Noah? Is that going to be the next book that you're writing?
No, I think I'll leave Noah alone. But so I used to belong to the I used to be on the Prince William County, Virginia Human Rights Commission, and several years ago, I did a speech on Universal Human Rights Day. And what I did was I chose several of the segments of our society that are usually, I don't want to say looked down on, but not given enough credit for what they do for us. So I chose African Americans, Native Americans, Hispanics, and Jews. These are four groups of people that over the years have accumulated countless Congressional Medals of Honor, Navy Crosses, Distinguished Service Crosses,
yes,
and everything. And still you get people today that say, oh, those people, they just don't do anything. You know, they don't fight for us or whatever, which we all know is a bunch of baloney. Right now I am starting to do research into a book that I'm right now calling Jewish Patriots of the American Revolution. I think that's another interesting story that could and should be told. A lot of people do not realize it, but one of the financial years of the American Revolution back in the 1770s was a gentleman named Chaim Soloman from Philadelphia. Very wealthy man, but by the time he finished loaning money to the Continental Congress, he was bankrupt. And I believe he died in debtor's prison. So that right now, I think that's the next one that I may tackle. That I think I'm gonna because that information is so much older than the American Civil War, that one may be a tough nut to crack, but I'm going to give it a shot.
An interesting story, and I hope that you follow through on that, and we'll have a chance to talk about that. This book is so well written. The Jewish Confederate Story, Experiences and Motivation. Samuel J. Corson has been our guest on the program. His website is Samuel J., J-A-Y, Corson, K-O-R-S-O-N. com. Information there on the books, and you can see if Samuel's working on any other books by going to the website. Book available at Amazon, the usual places, kingpagespress.com, the author's marketing consultant. We thank them for arranging our conversation today. Samuel, it's been a pleasure. Excellent job with this. It's a story that I was not familiar with, a fascinating story that you talk about in this book. Thank you for being with us on the program.
And thank you, Rick, for allowing me to tell the story.
Well, it's been our pleasure. Our guest on the program, Samuel J. Corson, with a K, K-O-R-S-O-N. Website, samueljcorson.com. Information available wherever books are sold. The book, The Jewish Confederate Story, Experiences and Motivations. Information on thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program right after these messages. Stay tuned. We're coming right back.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.